And welcome to another edition of Tell Me Your Story, new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We all have our own personal dreams and our local dreams, and they go wider and wider until they're global dreams. And we're here to help those come true. We're going to have an interesting conversation this afternoon. We're going to talk about world peace. And it's going to be from a rather interesting perspective. If you've ever put a clock on it, when would you like to have it? Today? Tomorrow? Next week? How about 5 years? We'll give it five. And we'll find out about what that is all about, because we're going to be talking with one of the co-founders of Peace in 5 Years, and we'll be talking with her in just a moment. We want you to tune in every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. We're broadcasting live on AM 1290 in Santa Barbara, California, and along the Central Coast. We are also streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and you go there, richarddugan.com, that's RichardDugan.com. Click on the Listen Live link. I made it large enough for everybody to find right there at the top of the page on the right-hand side. And you can listen to us stream live. You can also give us a call. If you have a question for our guest this afternoon, our number is 805-564-1290, 805-564-1290. If you're listening on the internet, 866-564-1290. I want to welcome to our program Amber, and it's Amber Lupton. She is the, I believe, co-founder of Peace in 5 Years. And Amber, I want to welcome you to our program.
Thank you so much, Richard. It's great to be on.
And peace to you.
Thank you.
Now, I'm going to start off by asking, I guess, what would be considered sort of a rhetorical question. Why are you waiting 5 years for world peace?
Well, you know, up to this point, war has been highly organized and peace has been highly disorganized. And so from our point of view, we are producing peace and putting the right teams together and all of these organizations that have already been working on peace inside of a synergistic plan to get it done by 2014. So we're waiting that long so that we can actually create the organization that's necessary to get it done.
Okay. We're going to talk more about that. You have a book out as well.
Yes.
And the title?
Give Peace a Deadline.
Give Peace a Deadline. We're going to talk about what kind of peace we're talking about and this deadline of 2014, why the deadline. This actually started on, if I'm not mistaken, February 14th, 2009. You started the clock ticking. Am I correct?
Exactly. We launched in 12 cities around the world in the Beverly Hills Hotel in Los Angeles, to Peru, to Lebanon, to Uganda, to Ireland. There were launch parties on every continent announcing the five-year countdown for world peace in 5 years.
How did you get involved in this?
Well, it was actually in Santa Barbara on February 10th. We were having a strategic meeting for another media company we have, and it was me and my partner. The room was filled with whiteboards and books on strategic strategies, and we were charting industry metrics. About 2 hours into the meeting, there was this moment where we looked at each other and I said, why don't we do this for world peace? Why don't we treat peace like a business and give it milestones and accountabilities and a deadline? And Nathan said, how about peace in 5 years? And I thought, maybe that's too soon, maybe 10 or 12. But I trust what he says, and I also know that people naturally plan within a five-year period. So we wrote out a pledge. By February 14th, 2014, I will have created world peace as measured by The Economist. And he signed it, and I signed it, and we were both really quiet because we knew something had just happened that we couldn't stop. It was taking us.
Mm-hmm. No, I've been there. That's how we handle this show. We just let the universe take it where it will. Who is this Nathan fella, and why do you trust him so much that you believed in him in the five-year plan?
Right. Well, Nathan and I have been friends for over 10 years now. He's the son of Bill and Veeve Gore, the founders of Gore-Tex, and they are listed continuously as one of the top 100 companies to work for in the United States. The way they work in the business is they work in small teams, and people find their own teams they want to work with. It's a much more organic, feminine business in a certain way, but they're a $3 billion company. So he has an amazing mind for business strategy and as well as business culture, how people work together in small teams to get things done.
I find it interesting that you're using a business model for what would for some be considered more of a more esoteric or spiritual concept, and that is peace.
Right. But when we say world peace, mm-hmm. we don't mean a lifestyle, a utopia, or an ideology. We mean the end to politically organized violence. Currently, there are 15 major violent conflicts in the world. And our goal, see, most people think that peace means the absence of conflict, and that's not true. Conflict is actually on a scale depending on what modality you're looking at. For instance, the Harvard Negotiation Project has a scale of 1 to 7, where 7 is violent conflict, and 6 or below is safe conflict. You know, the majority of us live in harmony together. We get along in our lives. You know, we have conflicts here and there, but we don't get violent about it. And so peace is really on a scale from 1 to 6. And then when it goes into a 7, that's violent conflict. That's war. If you've heard of a book called The Blue Ocean Strategy, it says if you want to solve major problems that have high emotional impact for people, you need to take a more pragmatic approach. And to solve some of these more pragmatic problems, you need to add emotionality. And I think we can all agree that peace is a deeply spiritual, deeply emotional, for many people, deeply moral issue. There's a lot of feelings involved in it. So we're looking at providing the pragmatism, the measurement, so we can clearly, you know, see the defined goal and accomplish it and say it's accomplished now. You know, mm-hmm. with this measurement has gone from 15 to 0.
We're going to talk more about this as we continue with Amber Lupton. She's co-founder of Peace in 5 Years and the website P5Y. That's the letter P, the number 5, the letter Y.com.
I
beg your pardon. .org. P5Y.org. I looked at the wrong line there. I had P5Y. I like that because it's very contemporary. It's if you will, 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of cuts right to the core. It tells you exactly what you're saying there if you understand Peace in 5 Years. And we're going to talk more about that as we continue. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. And again, that's P5Y.org. P5Y.org. We are also linked to P5Y.org at RichardDugan.com. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned. We have more coming up with Amber Lipton. New paradigms for a new world.
Are you sad or angry about past events in your life? Would you like more joy, love, and peace? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Start spreading.
Get ready for the greatest diva of them all, Liza. Liza Minnelli.
New York.
Live in concert, July 16th at the Shumash Casino Resort.
Life is a cap of red, old
child. The one.
Come to the camp.
The only Liza Minnelli performing all of her legendary songs.
Here she is, boys.
Liza Minnelli.
Here she is, Burrow.
July 16th.
Here's
live at the Shumash Casino Resort, the event of a lifetime. Reserve seats are on sale now at Shumash Casino Box Office, ShumashCasino.com, or charge at 1-800-585-3737. See Liza Minnelli live.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like fish sticks. Filets, I get, but sticks? Maybe we can just compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with Brie?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Trouble haunts you.
Understanding world peace is what we're going to try to do on this program, what it is, what it isn't, and we're going to talk with Amber Lupton, and she is the co-founder of Peace in 5 Years, p5y.org, and the book is entitled Give Peace a Deadline. You've given it a deadline of 2014, or 5 years from February 14th, 2009. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But I'd like to know a little bit more about you. Where do you come from? How did you get involved in something like this? I mean, wasn't your life full enough without taking on some kind of monumentally global event like this? I mean, there are a lot of easier things to do, you know.
Oh, you know, absolutely. And as my friend Zach Adler said this morning, he said, I'm really close to being sick and tired of having such an amazing life.
Well, I really feel for him.
But really, there's a privilege to, you know, there's a responsibility, a privilege. There's, especially here in the West, I've traveled quite often overseas. I've been to India. I spent time in the Middle East. I shot a documentary in West Africa. And the poorest people here in the United States have it. They are upper middle class compared to the majority of people in the world. So as Madeleine Albright told me, what will we use our freedom for? And I recognize that I'm free, that I live in a democracy, I live in an abundant Western culture, even in our crisis. You know, the majority of us have it so much better than everyone else. And, you know, I've been a transformational maverick from the time I was 11. I had exceptional parents. I grew up in Honey Creek, Iowa, on 40 acres of land. And, you know, I had kind of an empathetic awakening at 11, and my mother luckily had all of these books from Louise Hay to Tony Robbins, and I was walking on hot coals with Tony Robbins at 15 and, you know, assisting with Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and, you know, most of the big names in personal development. And I've had the privilege to be tutored and coached and mentored by some of the leading thought leaders of our time. And the number one thing they taught me is thinking for myself, critical thinking, looking at this life that we've been born into, seeing where does it reflect my values, where does it not, where does it reflect my own personal integrity, and where does it not. And so after about 15 years of this work with these teachers, personal work, many of them some of my good friends, I was looking at what is the gift that I'm particularly born to give to the planet. What is my responsibility? And after a few international peace conferences, after about a year and a half of reflection, this, you know, aha moment came about, you know, in the strategic meeting that Nathan and I were in. And it was obvious in that moment what it had all been for, what all my teachers had been for, the privileged life that I came from, the amazing parents I've had, you know, everything I've learned along the way, both difficult, you know, challenging and rewarding. And this is what it's for. It's for playing, I think, the biggest game on the planet, and that is how do we end war in the way we know it forever for real.
Now, you used a phrase to describe what world peace isn't. You used the word political in the context of the conflict, the conflicts that are going on. Isn't that correct? What was the term that you used?
Well, we see that peace is actually safe conflict, and that war is politically organized violence.
Okay, and yet there would be those who would argue that it's not political, it's religious, that most of the conflicts are over some differences of belief.
Well,
I mean, is that semantics more than anything else, you think?
Well, you know, what most people don't know, and there's some really great books about this, like The Bottom Billion, Steve Collier wrote it, Fixing Failed States, that in the majority of cases, religion, which are deeply held emotional beliefs that we have as human beings, that it's actually sort of it's used as a manipulation strategy by people who want to gain political power or monetary power. And so they tie into these heartfelt feelings we have about this is what I believe is true. And they use religion as propaganda to motivate people. The majority of the time, it is not religious leaders that lead us into war. It's people seeking political power that lead us into war.
But they will then use as the guise a sort of cloaked of religious reasoning, because I mean, people can even look back to this, the latest conflict that we, the U.S., are involved in between the U.S. quote unquote and the Muslims, and it's like, you know, the undertone is, okay, you've got the Christians versus the Muslims.
Exactly. That, you know, the Christians versus the Muslims is, you know, something that's very easy for a political person to glom onto for their own gains.
And it's a very sad situation. So let's talk a little bit about turning this around. So I know you're familiar with, you know, with the phrase in regards to giving peace a chance and, you know, let it begin with me. And if I don't have peace in my heart, there ain't no way I'm going to be able to bring about peace anywhere else.
Well, what we see is that there's, and in our book we go into this, of there's an evaluation of how peaceful you are in your own life, looking at everything from health to relationships to your family to your home. On a scale from 1 to 10, how peaceful do you feel,
mm-hmm.
you know, for your standard? And then what are the next actions for you to move that up even a little bit? Because with just a little bit more free attention, a little bit more alignment, now I'm free to not just focus on myself and my family, but I can now focus on my community. I can focus on making a difference. And at the same time, as we've seen it, we see that we're already at a certain level of growth and development and an abundance of survival, especially in the Western world. So we've seen that, you know, so much that happened in the 60s, the 70s, that people have grown to a point. And what is all of this personal growth for? What's all this spiritual work for? What's all this transformation for? If it isn't also to have an evolvement in the institutions globally that reflect our upgraded value system, that includes a value for all human life, a value for equality, a value for diverse cultures, a value that says, even though I don't completely understand you or what you're doing as another human being, I value your life, and I'm not willing to kill you as a way of conflict resolution.
I find it interesting that one of the thoughts that's I've heard go through the minds of others is, if only the members of the military, and we're talking about those who would go out on the front lines, would reach that certain level, as you've just stated, and basically say to their superiors, you know what, and again, we're talking collectively and globally, not just collectively U.S. military, but collectively all military bodies, these grunts, if you will, would just basically reach that higher level and say, you know what, I'm not going to do this. And you don't have a stockade large enough to contain all of us.
Yeah.
Ergo, if you want the battle fought, politicians, why don't you go fight?
Yeah.
Or better yet, let's not fight. Let's find another way of resolving these issues.
Exactly. Let's find another way to resolve these issues and just, you know, standing up and saying, I'm not fighting. And it's, as I think most of us have experienced, it's very hard to stand up in a group of people and saying, I'm different, I have a different view, and I'm willing to forsake your agreement in order to stand up for I know what is true. It is a rare, courageous individual willing to do that. And we were speaking to F.W. de Klerk, who helped end apartheid in conjunction with Nelson Mandela. And I asked, you know, Mr. de Klerk, you know, how did he end apartheid? What was needed? And what was needed was all of the pressure from Europe, from the Western world, saying, we want this. We want this to end. We want you guys to negotiate. We want to work it out. And from all of that pressure, from businesses, from individuals, F.W. de Klerk, he said, I was able to save face with my political constituencies and say, look, I'm getting all this pressure. I have to negotiate with Nelson Mandela. So the reason I'm telling that story is because it shows the power of us as individuals, not necessarily involved in the conflict, but with our voice, a group of us, this movement that's being created that's saying, killing is wrong, and I do not stand for killing as a form of conflict resolution. Enough of us saying that pressures government, pressures businesses to make the choice that they already want to make. That there are some very good people in office, some very amazing people in the military, and we've spoken to various people in the military and what the programs they've been working on the last couple years. And they say, yes, and we literally follow orders of the chief commander. So we need the political support. And I've been in the rooms with these high-level political leaders, Richard, and it was eye-opening for me to see how much they literally placate to the public. That the political leaders are actually terrified of us as individuals because they know how much power we have when we stand up to them. They're looking for, they want the vote, they want to stay in power, and there's a lot of strategies going on about how they stay in power, how they placate us, with the stories they tell us, all of that. But what that showed me is how much we can create as individuals when we band together underneath of a cause.
But a lot of people are feeling the sense that they don't have a voice, and that seems to continue to be precipitated in the media, in spite of the fact that, we're being told to go out and vote and all these kinds
right.
of things. But a lot of people feel the phrase being disenfranchised.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the best case in point is the current election in Iran, where the people of the minority party or the candidate weren't happy with the result, and they went out into the streets. Now, one of the sad facts was that apparently one young man's brother was killed. And there he was in the streets. I remember hearing this on the news, and he was going to kill the killers of his brother, which I thought was a little backwards, because it actually brought to mind a scene from the movie Gandhi, where the Muslim and the Hindu came to him, and they had each killed the opposite religion, if you will, or the other's religion, son. And so Gandhi says to the Muslim, says, go find a Hindu boy and raise him as your own, only you raise him as a Hindu. And that's what came to mind. It's like, what is it going to fix? What is it going to, is it going to bring back your son, your brother, if you kill the killers of your brother?
Yeah.
Where is the logic? And again, I know this individual obviously was motivated by anger and grief, loss of his brother. These are the kinds of things that are out there. And so we've got a lot of emotion that is continually stirred up. What are the offerings on the part of peaceinfiveyears.org to help people to maintain some level of peace in their own minds and hearts, not to continue perpetuating the anger and the violence, so that we can again reach that goal in 2014?
Right. Well, first, it's really easy for us to feel alone, to be frustrated, to be angry, to feel like I don't have a voice, to feel, despondent, like, oh, I'm a victim to the government, and they're going to do their thing, and I don't have power. It's, it's really easy to feel that way. And, until we find a group or an alliance of people that see the world the way we do, and it's very comforting to see, oh, I'm not alone in the way I see things or what I see is possible, and the difference I want to make and the safety that I want to raise my, family inside of. And, P5Y is that movement. It's the movement of people that are tired of the political game that they know is hurting people. And coming together, P5Y.org, you can register for a weekly update of a peace action. There are teams you can form online. You can donate to the movement at p5y.org. So it's not just around the website. It's also a collective movement where you can start a peace team in your community or join one. In the book that we wrote, Give Peace a Deadline, there's a whole chapter on what kind of peacemaker are you. And it helps you find your purpose, that you're born to give the planet, and how that connects to ending war, how we know it, forever by 2014.
We have a War Department. Are there plans to encourage the present or future administrations to create a Department of Peace?
Yes. Well, that's Dot Maver, who I know, who helps head up the Department of Peace. It's moving forward with velocity. It's getting a lot of support. They're meeting with Congress. And there's already the U.S. Institute of Peace, which we've been meeting with. And, Joan Crocker, Sione Crocker, who've been involved in the United States Institute of Peace, have been consulting us on this project. Mm-hmm. But we've had consultants on this project from Madeleine Albright to Paul Wolfowitz, and having conversations with wide spectrum of political views of how do we really get this done? Who are the people that need to get it done? What are the challenges we're going to come up against? And how do we overcome them together?
Hmm. It sounds like, on the one hand, a monumental task that could never, maybe will never happen. But on the other hand, it's like, bottom line is nothing like this has ever been tried before.
Right.
So you don't know whether it'll work or not. And all you can do is put it out there and encourage as many people to get involved in any way that they can. We're going to talk about how people can do that in just a moment. I want to let you know you're listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. My guest is the co-founder of Peace in 5 Years, the website p5y.org, the book Give Peace a Deadline. That deadline is, if I'm correct, it's February 14th of 2014.
Exactly.
Why was the 14th of February chosen?
We chose it because, well, we like the numerology of it, and we also chose it around St. Valentine and moving the love of Eros, or individual love, into agape love, into collective love, into friendship of the planet. So realizing we're all in this together, and what is it, you know, in the family of nations to, you know, resolve our conflicts in a safe manner that protects all people, not just, you know, one or two groups of people.
People can get in touch with you and in touch with the group, of course, through p5y.org. That's right, .org.
Yes.
Got it right. And they can also get a copy of the book, Give Peace a Deadline, through the website.
Yep, in major bookstores.
And as well as major bookstores, Amazon.com, and so forth. Let's talk about some of the steps that we as individuals can take. Where does one start? And I'm thinking maybe step one is go to the website, p5y.org, and register. And what does that do?
Well, you'll get the peace action alerts where you can, you know, sign up for various peace actions that you can take. You can be informed on what the movement is doing right now, and also exercises you can do for both to generate both internal peace in your life and also see how you can expand into your community and other peace teams.
What kind of exercises?
Well, one of the exercises that's really simple is if you draw three circles on a piece of paper, one is your skills, one is your activities, and one is your passion, and just fill in those circles of what are you already doing? And what are your passions? What can you not get enough of? The things you could do them all day long and just not get tired of them. And then, you know, what you're trained in, your education, your whatever skill you have, even if you're not using it. And then looking at where these overlap are your natural impassioned contributions to peace, so that you don't have to go off and do something completely different. Like, Richard, you're involved in media, so what you're doing for media right now is already helping to create peace by 2014. You're using the voice of media and what you're involved in as a promotion tool and an education tool for people. You know, if someone is a nurse, they can donate, you know, part of their time to, you know, one of these conflict areas or different projects that are going on over there. Or, you know, I know different sewing groups that make something, and then, you know, whatever it is, there's a whole process, like, from What Kind of Peacemaker You Are, that walks you through 1, 2, 3 to see how you can connect what you're already doing to creating peace by 2014 so that it's easier and fun and integrated with your life.
If you'd like to give us a call and ask Amber a question of your own, you can certainly do so. The number here, 805-564-1290, 805-564-1290. If you're listening live on the Internet, we are streaming every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. at richarddugan.com. The number is 866-564-1290, 866-564-1290. We would certainly entertain your calls and give you an opportunity to ask Amber a question in regards to giving peace a deadline, peace in 5 years, p5y.org, and certainly love to hear from you and see what you think. You know, do you think this is something that's, is this a waste of time, or is this something that's very viable? I personally believe it is extremely viable. I know that we have to do this one person at a time. You have mentioned a lot. I mean, if I can put it this way, Amber, you've done a lot of name dropping. How have the people that you have come in contact with, these heavy hitters, how have they responded to this in the context of the deadline, the 5 years, is it too? Do they think it's too long, too short? Is it even viable? Will it ever happen? I mean, how are they reacting to all of this?
Well, when we were speaking to Mike Moore, who's the former Director General of the World Trade Organization, he and also the former Prime Minister of New Zealand, he said to Nathan and I, he said, "You are the best of American optimism." And he said, "Just because we failed in the 60s doesn't mean that you shouldn't try."
And now, that's interesting. He says that they failed in the 60s.
Yeah. That how, and this is what's also distinct about the movement, that in the past, including in the 60s, peace and conflict have been dealt with one by one. Like, oh, let's get the, the Vietnam War, let's end that, or let's get the Israel-Palestine conflict solved. It's all been piecemeal, and that's not what P5Y is about. P5Y is looking at the entire structure between the family of nations. How do we handle conflicts? So we have it. It's actually easier to work on the entire structure and the agreements versus one conflict at a time.
I know that within certain religions, one in particular, they have a wonderful way of resolving conflicts or dealing with issues, if you will. They have a council of nine, and they will have someone come in and address the council and say, okay, here's the issue that I'm dealing with, or the concern, or the conflict, or what have you. And each person in that body then begins to address it. And they go through the process of putting their ideas on the table. Their ideas are on the table, and they belong to the group. They come with a solution, and they move forward. What kind of conflict resolution processes are you coming up with?
Well, the UN has over 500 conflict processes that they call upon, depending on what conflict they're in. So there's a plethora of constructive, peaceful conflict resolutions out there. And Bill Urey, who is the author of The Third Side, and co-founder of the Harvard's Project on Negotiation. We really like his system of the third side. He's an anthropologist. He studied various forms of conflict throughout, the ages of humanity. And what he says is basically that if you and I are in a conflict, it's very hard for us to solve it just on our own. But if we have a third party come in who, doesn't have a stake in the conflict, they can help us work it out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what ancient cultures did. How they worked it out is they got people together, that people were not expected to resolve their conflicts just between each other. It was resolved in the community, in the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at activating the third side, activating the groups of people who are not, like here in the West, who are not directly involved in the conflicts, but are saying, we want this to stop, this is how we want it to stop, this is what we're willing to listen to and do, and that it's no longer enough for two people to be in conflict or two countries to be in conflict and us to turn a blind eye and say that's their problem, especially with the rise in war technology, nanoterror. We're in a race with war technology right now.
Yeah. I also found it interesting, too, that the conflict resolution or dealing with a given issue, they would deal with it today, and they would give the solution to the individual who would then go off and utilize it. But that didn't mean that that was the end of it, because if it didn't work, then the person would come back again and say, this one didn't work. So then they would go back at it and come up with new ideas, and this person would walk away with another possible resolution for his conflict. So, and I think that's one of the other issues that we need to deal with too, is once we come up with a solution, that doesn't mean that it's over, because we're all human and we're all working to try to come up with the answer, but today we may have come up with a part of it.
Yeah.
And we have to keep working that through. We actually have a caller. His name is Mike from San Francisco. Mike, go ahead. You have a question for Amber.
Yes. Okay. What I wanted to ask Amber is if she feels that the universal human need to achieve world peace, and if her answer to that is yes, I just wanted to ask why she thinks more people haven't put forth larger effort to achieve it.
Amber?
Thus far.
It's a good question.
Well, there's actually a lot of resources and forces on the planet working for peace. Last year, over $100 billion was given from private and public sectors in humanitarian aid. There are over 20,000 international nonprofits or NGOs working for some sort of peace or education or human rights. But there's been a sense of, in the organizations, that I'm great, or this organization is great, but the others are not. So there hasn't been a sense of peace and cohesion and collaboration in the very institutions working for peace. And there hasn't been a deadline. So, I mean, in business terms, if you want to work together on a project, you've got to have a deadline in order to have milestones and put teams together and accountabilities. So,
okay.
You know, absolutely, I see that peace is a milestone. Peace is, you know, a step in the emergent consciousness of the planet. That it's showing that, you know, for those of us who've reached a certain level of integrity, of value of human life, of oneness, that we're not just willing to live it for ourselves, we're now taking responsibility globally to affect the generations to come.
Does that answer your question, Mike?
Should I respond or just no?
I beg your pardon?
Should I respond or ask any questions?
Absolutely, okay. No, if you've got a response, sure.
Well, okay. By universal human need, I mean like that would be air, food, water, love, certainty, uncertainty. So if world peace is included as a universal human need, you know, if somebody's drowning, they're going to kick their legs. If they're suffocating, they're going to try to get air. So if it's a human need, then I was asking kind of why more people haven't kicked their legs, so to speak.
So is this part of the DNA? Is this in our DNA to seek out peace? Or is this something that we as humans think, as opposed to feel, that we need?
Does that make sense, or is that...
No, that makes very good sense. And Amber, what do you think? I mean, is this something that's innate in us as human beings? Is this part of our DNA to seek out and have peace?
Well, you know, in a way, peace is abstract, if you just take it as a word. But what I see is fundamental in a human need is for safety. We have a fundamental human need to feel secure, to, you know, live lives that, you know, we feel we won't be invaded by other people, that we can have families, we can aspire in our work life, in our art, in our joy to create and to be happy. So I see that fundamentally a human need is for safety.
Mm-hmm.
And how we've tried to get that safety is through armies, and we think that armies will keep us safe. But what we've, you know, recently with the rise in technology, armies no longer keep us safe, especially with people willing to, you know, load their bodies with bombs and sacrifice their own life for what they believe in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, bioterror, nanoterror, there's the Department of Homeland Security predicts a bioterror attack in the next 3.5 years if we don't do something differently.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's how do we look for this human need of keeping us safe? And what we're seeing with P5Y is the next level of safety is a new understanding and agreement of how we solve conflicts.
Very good question, Mike. Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it.
Thank you both.
And I hope you keep listening.
I sure will.
All right, and bye-bye.
Bye.
And if you'd like to give us a call, our number is 564-1290, 805-564-1290 here on the Central Coast and across the country. Or if you're calling outside the area and you're listening live on the internet at richarddugan.com, you can certainly give us a call, 866-564-1290. That's an interesting question, Amber. And the thing is that you're when you put it in the context of striving for a sense of safety, that actually really covers it, whether it's dealing with conflict between ourselves or nature, for that matter, because we here on the Central Coast, just in the last 3 years, have been dealing with the issue of fires.
Yeah.
And many of us have not felt safe. We haven't felt like there's really a conflict. There's been a conflagration, a little different,
right.
But nonetheless, we have not felt safe. So that's, I think that's a very poignant way of putting that. And I think that's a very good question raised by Mike out of San Francisco in terms of whether that's something that's innate in us. And I think the answer is yes, it is. It's just not termed in the context of peace, and it's termed in the context of safety. And we all want to feel that. And I think that as we continue here on the program, I'm hoping that people will go to the website, p5y.org, and check out what you folks are doing. What other, some of the other steps or processes that an individual will or can go through,
mm-hmm.
through p5y.org to make a difference and to, if you will, meet the deadline.
Right. Well, there's a condensed version of Give Peace a Deadline on p5y.org for free,
mm-hmm.
that you can download. Anyone can download it and get a robust summary of what is going on, you know, in the manner of peace in the world and, you know, their individual contribution. And the main message, the first step, is even seeing that peace is possible. You know, any institutional slavery seemed impossible until it was actually over. And I think at a certain level, world peace will seem like that's impossible until we actually create it.
All right, so let me put this question to you. You've given peace a deadline of February 14th, 2014, and you've also described to us what that would look like.
Yeah.
What if we don't meet the deadline? Now, I'm the first person to say that words are very important and powerful,
right.
and we need to be speaking that it is possible.
Yeah.
But you know there are people out there listening who are asking that question.
Right.
What are you going to do if, you know, because, hey, we fall past deadlines all the time.
Yeah. Well, the way we're looking at this is personal responsibility and accountability, that we're taking responsibility all the way back to the source of me as a person. And I've made this pledge. There have been hundreds of other business people, regular people, who have personally promised to create world peace as measured by The Economist by 2014. And our goal is to create that. We look at it, how we look at it is, if we would have ended institutional slavery in the United States in all but Alabama and Texas, would we have been successful? Well, from our point of view, no. And we wouldn't have been successful with institutional slavery. From our point of view, war is wrong. Killing people is wrong. And it's a new moral stand. You know, the Quakers were the ones who first took the stand, who invested, who hired statisticians, documentarians in England to expose the reality of institutional slavery at that time. And, you know, people were in other delusions that, like, oh, slaves, that we were treating the slaves well, that it was good for the ship trade. And they debunked it through media. And P5Y, our goal is to debunk the myths of war, to educate people on the reality and the horrors of it, that the increase in civilian casualties has been going up consistently since World War II. Now it's 70 or 80% of casualties are everyday people like you and me.
Mm-hmm.
That's moms, dads, even animals, you know, cats, dogs. It's everyday. It's when people get the really the intimate horror of war, and I've been in, you know, the atrocities, the aftermath, and in certain wars. It's life-altering. There's a sense of this can never happen again, and I'm responsible. And that's what I want to drive home with people. People get, I'm responsible. They see the horror of war. It's literally one is compelled to act, to do something.
Now, you have put out the intent to have world peace by February 14th, 2014. You're probably familiar with the Intention Experiment, the book as well as the actual experiments by Lynn McTaggart, who has been on this program.
Yes.
And so we're putting that intent out here on this program now. That's what we want too.
Yes.
Okay. So we get to February 14, 2014, and you see all of the signs, and we have world peace. Now what?
That is a really excellent question. We've been working with the Global Peace Index. That is the most respected measurement of peace. And here's the first thing, just to bring it home. There is a $7.2 trillion, what's called the dividend, just in the United States. You know, we've gotten ourselves so far in debt. Just from us getting these 15 conflicts down to a safe level of 6 or below, that's $7.2 trillion for the U.S. For each person, that's $3,100 more a year. Now, more than that, that's financial. There's more than that. I look at personal integrity. Like, what do I pay every day in my own personal integrity to live in a world where killing human beings like myself is currently agreed upon as okay and right, and that I pay for it in my taxes? So what frees up in us when now we wake up in a world where my values are reflected in the global conflict resolution system, that I'm not afraid of another country coming in and invading us, or there's an agreement that genocide is not tolerable? So we're not just protecting the United States of America, and, you know, England isn't just protecting England, but we have a promise to protect literally all people if a genocide is happening. It's no longer, you know, turning and ignoring the fact of an atrocity.
Are you, if I can simplify this, are you saying that there is actually a stimulus package, a financial stimulus package tied to having world peace by 2014?
I'm saying that there are reliable measurements based on the Global Peace Index, based on the World Bank Knowledge Economy Index, the Human Development Index, the Yale Environmental Sustainability Index, the World Bank Ease of Doing Business Index, all of those come together with the most, you can look it up, the Global Peace Index.
You could turn you're saying that we could turn the economy upside down in a good way and really be thriving. Well, guess what? I'm in.
Exactly. And that's what the majority, especially the military complex, would not like you to know.
Yeah.
You're actually going to be richer, better off, and the whole world is going to be richer and better off in a safe conflict world.
I'm in.
Yeah.
How about you? You're listening out there. What do you think? Check it out, p5y.org. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. We'll be back with our final moments with Amber Lipton.
Have you lost direction in life? Do you constantly worry or give to others but deny your own heart? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
The Shumash Casino Resort proudly presents Steppenwolf in concert.
Head out on the highway.
John Kay and Steppenwolf in concert Thursday, July 2nd.
Well, you don't know what we can find. Why don't you come with me, little girl, on a magic carpet ride?
Legendary hard rock band Steppenwolf.
It's all right. Hey, Lordy, ma, it's all right.
Appearing live at the Shumash Casino Resort.
Rock me, baby, rock me, baby, all night long.
Tickets are on sale now at the Shumash Casino box office or by phone at 800-585-3737 or order online at shumashcasino.com.
We can climb so high, I never wanna die.
Don't miss Steppenwolf, live.
Born to be wild.
Steppenwolf. July 2nd at 8 p.m. only at the Shumash Casino Resort.
The federal excise tax on cigarettes recently increased to just over $1 per pack of common brands. The government's first cigarette taxes were levied this month in 1864 during the Civil War. Placing stamps on each package to show that the tax had been paid came along 4 years later. Now, about 1 in 5 Americans smoke. On a per capita basis, Americans smoke an average of 1,700 cigarettes a year. Profile America is a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
If we leave here today, we could be 1,000 miles away. Take to that road, see how far it goes, and on that great ocean road, oh, the trouble that you know empties out as you go. Oh, walk with me, talk with me,
Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Our guest is Amber Lupton, and she's the co-founder of Give Peace a Deadline, p5y.org, and we just have a few moments left. I have two questions, and I'm going to ask you to answer them fairly quickly in the last 2.5 minutes. One is one that was brought up during the break. You know that there are people out there that are going to fight your message tooth and nail, and they are going to keep doing what they're doing, strapping bombs to themselves, stirring up controversy, et cetera, et cetera. How do you, and I'm going to use the phrase, how do you stop them? How do you change them? How do you get rid of them? What do you do so that they don't undermine this effort?
This is the responsibility of individuals, where it isn't just government and police that are going to handle this. The example I gave is in Egypt 7 years ago, when a radical group of Muslims blew up a tourist bus. And the tourism went way down. But it was everyday individuals like me and you, business owners, who confronted these radical groups of Muslims, said, you know, you're making us lose money, our tourism has gone way down, you need to shut up or you need to leave. But this is not tolerable. And so I see that it's from the movement of people, the strength of in numbers of the group, that are willing to confront friends and families. And for the various radical groups of people, they all have mothers, they all have sisters, they all have communities they're a part of. And we're looking at, in the movement, inspiring everyday individual responsibility versus just relying on political leaders and the police to help us solve our problems.
Final question in 30 seconds. I hate to only give you that much time. You could be doing a lot of other things in this world, doing some more creative things and so forth. Why this? Why now?
I'm really doing this because I see I'm saving our butts in the future. I feel my family, my friends. And I look at 4 or 5 years out at some horrible thing happening here in the United States, and looking back at, why didn't I do something when I knew I could have? And so right now, this I see as the most important leveraged action that I can do to protect my friends, my family, and the number one thing I can do to increase the quality of life for women around the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't do it because you would do something for your fellow man, do it because there's an economic benefit for you down the road. And I think that's pretty neat. Thank you much. Mm-hmm. Amber Lupton, co-founder of Give a Peace a Deadline and p5y.org. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. Amber, stay on the line. We'll be getting to you right after the program. We'll be back next Saturday at 3 p.m. with the program Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Love to